Thank you, Rick. Good afternoon, brethren. Happy Sabbath. Good to see you all here today. Welcome to those all watching online. Brethren, every week we have prayer cards to sign for brethren in the back foyer there. And these cards not only go out to brethren in this country, but sometimes brethren around the world that are, of course, suffering from various trials, whether they be health trials or maybe the loss of a loved one. I think even last week I read one of the cards, someone had lost their spouse to COVID and they were in pretty dire straits for their own health trials. So there's a lot of people that are suffering. And I know the words of the messages that we write in these prayer cards bring a lot of encouragement to the people that we write them to, and truly can have a really positive and profound impact on those who are receiving these cards, again, during those very difficult times. Now, right before this past feast, we had the opportunity to see Dan Sudam, which would be our last time in seeing him. And one of the highlights of that trip over to his house and seeing Dan and Marcy was the joy that he had in sharing a big box of cards he received. He was so happy to share the cards with us, and he was so impressed to receive cards from around the world. I remember him telling me he received a card all the way from the Isle of Man, down south all the way to Tasmania, and he was so impressed and so encouraged that so many people, as he said, I remember in his words, that never knew him, were writing such encouraging words and praying these very words out of their writing to our Almighty God. And they were very, very encouraging to him and helped him, of course, in a very difficult time. For myself personally, finding the right words to pass on to people that are suffering or dealing with the loss of a loved one wasn't always something natural. It didn't come natural to me to find those words in order to comfort or encourage them. I know as a teenager and even as a young adult, multiple times when I knew there was either brethren maybe in the congregation or even family members dealing with trials or even the loss of a loved ones, I wouldn't say much to them. And sometimes I would even avoid talking to them because I just didn't know what to say. I struggled to know the right words and what to say to them, and as I noted, sometimes I didn't say anything. Though over time that did change, and I eventually found encouraging words to say. Words that I knew were comforting and helpful, mainly because I heard other people saying those words, and I saw the comfort that they brought to others in trials, even the comfort they brought to me when I was facing trials, and how uplifting those very words are. Brethren, the words that we use and how we communicate with each other really matter and are really important. Words, as I noted, can encourage and lift up, and they can bring hope during an incredible trial. I can remember Dan in particular telling me that he read these cards multiple times just because of the encouragement that they brought to him. Now, on the flip side, unfortunately, words and how they are communicated can also do a tremendous amount of harm. Words can end friendships, estrange family members, and create harsh work environments. I've seen all these examples in my own personal life, and I'm sure you can all know examples in your own lives. As such, with my message today, I would like to discuss the power of the words we use and the impact they can have on one another. The title of my message today is simply this: Choose Your Words Wisely. The premise of my message will focus on the contrasting negative impacts that words can have on relationships, and also the positive impact that words can have on our relationships. We'll do a little bit of compare and contrast. But before we get into those negative and positive impacts, let's establish the power that words can have by turning to James chapter 3. So if you join me there in James chapter 3. Here in James, we find a very detailed account of the power of the words we use. I know in my Bible, this section of James chapter 3 is entitled Controlling the Tongue. And I'll read from the New Living Translation because I think it brings out a little bit more of the points I want to prove today. So again, James chapter 3, we'll begin in verse 2. Verse 2 says, "Indeed, we all make mistakes. For if we could control our tongues, we could be perfect and could also control ourselves in every other way." Stated by James, the tongue is not possible to control due to our human nature. And as James notes, if we could control it, if we could control everything that comes out of our mouth, we would be perfect like Christ. But again, we're not perfect, so it takes a lot of work in order to control the tongue. Continuing on in verse 3, he says this, "We can make a large horse go wherever we want by means of a small bit in its mouth. And a small rudder makes a huge ship turn wherever the pilot chooses to go, even though the winds are strong." These small physical objects can have a tremendous impact on much larger vessels. I think these are two very good examples that James uses. And it's really interesting to consider them both. You think of a horse, a large horse, or a gigantic boat that are controlled by these very small objects, being a bit and a rudder. If you think about it, controlling such devices, whether it's somebody that's riding a horse or captaining a ship, you can't just, without any experience, go on a horse and think that you're going to control it. And you can't just immediately go on a big carrier and just turn the rudder and think you're going to control it. That control takes a lot of discipline, takes a lot of time, a lot of self-control. You just don't immediately know how to control these larger vessels. It takes quite a bit of time and discipline and self-control. Likewise, the tongue can be tamed, but in a similar manner, it takes a lot of time and control and discipline. But brethren, if the tongue is not tamed, what are the consequences? James immediately gets into that in verse 5. Verse 5 says, "In the same way the tongue is a small thing that makes grand speeches, but a tiny spark can set a great forest on fire. And among all the parts of the body, the tongue is a flame of fire." It's a great analogy when you think of it. "It is a whole world of wickedness, corrupting your body. It can set your whole life on fire, for it is set on fire by hell itself." Unfortunately, we have all been subject to those not controlling their tongues. And we've also had areas or times in our lives when we didn't control our own tongues and said things that are unfortunate, which again can do an incredible amount of damage, as noted by James. Now, the analogy of a burning forest is something that we all can relate to here, especially in Northern California. 2021, in particular, this past year, was a historic year for forest fires, and of course, the years preceding last year were historic years as well. Living on the West Coast, we've seen millions of acres of forestry burn, unfortunately. And as we know, it doesn't take long for an amazing amount of damage to occur. That very small spark can cause a lot of damage. For example, we probably all remember the Caldor Fire. It was the fire that started in El Dorado County and El Dorado Forest and reached all the way to almost the shores of South Lake Tahoe. Because the smoke was so bad, as you may remember, we actually had to cancel our trumpet services in North Tahoe. But that fire spread extremely fast. According to Cal Fire, it notes that it only took 2 days from the very spark of that fire till 2 days later for it to burn 90,000 acres. Now, 90,000 acres is 140 square miles, so it only took 2 days to do that much damage. And in total, the fire burned 1,000 structures. As you probably remember, it completely destroyed the town of Grizzly Flats, completely wiped that town out. It looks like a bomb went off in that town, if you've seen it recently. Now, there is a reason that James uses the analogy of the tongue as a flame of fire, because it really can do a lot of damage, just like these amazing fires that we see in real life. The tongue, if not controlled, can completely devastate relationships. Furthermore, an interesting thought regarding these fires is that I was curious of how long it would take for a forest to regenerate and to regrow to be exactly what it was before the fire happened. And on average, CAL FIRE noted that it takes 65 years, basically an entire lifetime, for a forest to regenerate and to look like what it did once previous to the fire. So all the everything that burned in El Dorado County in the National Forest, probably in my lifetime and yours, we won't see what it looked like just a year ago. In a similar manner, the tongue can cause damage to relationships, can ruin relationships that sometimes take years to repair, or in some cases are never repaired in an entire lifetime, unfortunately. Brethren, there is a tremendous amount of power and unfortunate negative consequences that can be done by the tongue and the words that we say. Now, as I mentioned at the beginning of my message, and described by the flame of fire, the tongue can produce a lot of negative consequences. I discussed it in a very macro level as far as individual relationships and the damage that our words can do as far as destroying relationships. But let's think about it on a bigger level in our society. What has the tongue done, and what have words done to our society, and what is the impact? We don't have to look very far to, of course, see constant discourse within our society. The good that came about with social media about 10, 15 years ago, unfortunately, I would say in many cases, there's a lot more negative impacts that social media has than positive. Of course, when it originally came, it connected people in more ways than ever. And I would say now it's probably disconnecting people in more ways than ever, unfortunately. Now, that discourse, you've probably all seen, has really heated up in the last 2 years. I know from my own observations, there seems to be a lot of anger out there in how people talk to each other. Simply said, the words that people use aren't very nice to each other nowadays if they don't agree. The polarization in our society and strong opinions, whether it's about COVID-19, masks, vaccine, has all led to many people to use the tongue as a flame of fire that destroys closer relationships, in some cases, even breaks up families. Now, this past summer, Crystal and I got to go to a young adult weekend. We're still young adults. I think we have a couple more years until we're no longer considered young adults, so we try to take part in a young adult weekend. And one item that was discussed at that weekend that I thought was very interesting was the breaking down of families in our society. What's causing that? Well, brethren, a lot of that has to do with how families communicate and talk to one another and the words that they use. That's kind of one of the root causes of the breaking down of communication in relationships as well. Now, an article that was discussed this weekend was titled, quote, "What's Ripping American Families Apart?" It was written by an opinionist named David Brooks from the New York Times, and this article was dated July 29th of 2021, so it was written this past summer. I'm going to quote from this article because I think it really brings across my points as far as the damage that's done in society by the words that people in our society use. Quote, it says, and this is the very beginning of the article, quote, "At least 27% of Americans are estranged from a member of their own family. And research suggests about 40% of Americans have experienced estrangement at some point. The most common form of estrangement is between adult children and one or both parents, a cut usually initiated by the children." Continuing on, Brooks writes, "I write about this phenomenon here because it feels like a piece of what seems to be the psychological unraveling of America, which has become an emerging theme of my column. Terrible trends are everywhere. Major depression rates among youth aged 12 to 17 rose by 63% between 2013 and 16. So only in 3 years there's a rise of 63%. He notes American suicide rates increased by 33% between 1999 and 2019. The percentage of Americans who say they have no close friends has quadrupled since 1990, according to the Survey Center of American Life. And finally, 54% of Americans report sometimes or always feeling that no one knows them well, according to a 2018 survey. Saul breaking down in relationships has caused all these extremely negative consequences in our society. And Brooks ends this article in a way that ties back again to my point of the power of the tongue, power of words, and the negative consequences that they can have. Again, the tongue is not tamed, as James notes. The very concluding sentences of this article says the following, quote, "People who feel betrayed will lash out at someone if there is no one there to help them process their underlying hurt." So again, they'll lash out at someone. As the Franciscan friar Richard Rohr wisely wrote, "If we do not transform our pain, we will most assuredly transmit it." Brethren, these are unfortunate consequences of the tongue. And why James said, as we noted, it can lead to complete wickedness. So I think it's easily proven how much negative can again come from such a little member if it is not controlled. But on the flip side, what happens when the tongue is controlled? Please join me, if you would, in Proverbs chapter 25. Here in Proverbs chapter 25, and we'll actually stay in Proverbs for a little bit, let's examine the tremendous positive impacts that can happen when the tongue is tamed. Additionally, what good can come from that? Here in Proverbs, Solomon gives us an incredible visual of what happens when we choose our words wisely and have control over the tongue. Let's read Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 11. Verse 11 says, "A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver." Brother, when the right words are used, they're like a fine piece of jewelry to those that are listening and are perfectly said. Now, I'm a visual learner, and when I read this verse, I think of a really big puzzle, gigantic puzzle with a lot of pieces. And if you've ever put a really big puzzle together, there's a lot of satisfaction when you get to those final pieces. I think about one of those last hard pieces you're trying to find, and when you finally get it and it fits perfectly into that puzzle, at least for me, there's a lot of satisfaction that comes from that. Well, when I think of a word fitly spoken, that's the visualization I get. It's a word that is perfectly said, perfect for the time, perfect for whatever interaction that you're having. Complete satisfaction. Now, there are probably times in all of our lives when we can remember when a word was fitly spoken and how that really felt good and how, again, it brought joy to the person that was hearing it and was just right for the occasion. And it showed that controlling the tongue can, of course, have positive outcomes and results. Now, I can recall an example in my life when words were fitly spoken and how the outcome was very positive. And bear with me, it's a little bit of a long story, but I think it's my point across. Now, prior to the job I'm currently at, I was at an accounting firm, and part of that job was to sell. Now, as an accountant, it's not very natural for anybody that's an accountant to sell. I didn't get into accounting to sell, but eventually when you're at these accounting firms, or if you work for a law firm or something like that, at the end of the day, you're in a business, and you're trying to grow that business, so you have to sell. So, again, not something that comes natural, but it took a lot of work. And at this firm, I actually joined it a couple years ago. I had about 8 years' experience with another colleague, and we both left a previous firm and went to this new firm, and we were trying to sell. And, again, we're not natural salesmen, and any good salesman, even if they're very good, they fail a lot. That's one thing I think that's underestimated if you're in sales. Just get used to people saying no to you a lot. Now, for us, our goal was to bring in new clients and perform professional accounting services. And How it works is essentially you do a lot of marketing, you do conferences, you speak at different engagements to try to show your expertise, and eventually you hope that a client will send a RFP, or a request for proposal, that you propose on the accounting services. You give them a quote of how much it will cost to perform those services for their business. And for us in particular, a good busy season or a good sales season, we would get maybe 15 requests. That seems like a lot, but you would have to put a written proposal together. And part of that proposal, a lot of times, you would never even hear back. You put 50 pages together, you send it, you don't hear back. Kind of discouraging. And I'd say probably out of those 15, you maybe receive 7 responses back that you get invited to an interview, an oral interview. And out of those 7 interviews, you may only win 1 client. So again, a lot of work for just 1 client, but when you're starting out, you kind of got to start from the bottom. So myself and a coworker, we went through this process, and eventually we went to, I think it was our 2nd or 3rd interview. We heard no quite a bit. And eventually we had to come up with a good sales pitch, because we knew when we were successful in the past, the most important thing that clients would say why you won their work is you said something that caught their attention. Basically, you had words that were fitly spoken, words that really separated yourself from the competition. So we worked on our sales pitch a lot. We didn't have a lot of experience, so we knew we were going to compete against others that had a lot more experience and better credentials than us. So we're at this particular interview, and they're asking us all these questions, and finally they ask the question of why we should engage you as our accountant. And you know, you don't have any testimonials compared to some of these other clients. You really don't have much experience. What's going to separate you, and why should we give you your business? Well, after hearing no a lot, you finally get to tune that response a little bit better. And I don't know exactly what we said, but essentially it was, we want you to be our premier client, and the level of service and value that we're going to add to your business is going to be exceptional. It's going to be better than anyone else. And the reason that's going to be proven to be true is we want to use you as our testimonial. In order to grow our business, we want you to be our marquee client and to be a reference, a testimonial in the future. And that didn't work on everyone, but finally we got a call the next day and we won their business. And they said that is exactly why we won their business. And I was only successful that time, and a couple other times. I'm no longer in sales, but I'm sure you can all think of times when a word was fitly spoken and how good it feels when a word is fitly spoken. Now, I give that example because there are many times in our lives when it can have a much more profound impact outside of just business. But think about our own relationships when a word is fitly spoken and the impact that can have, especially on our families. Now let's go to Proverbs 15 to further emphasize this point of a word fitly spoken. And again, think about in the context of our relationships with one another and also our fellow brethren. Here in Proverbs chapter 15, it's really a positive chapter, or I should say a powerful chapter, that compares and contrasts words that are fitly spoken against words that are not really fitly spoken, if you think about it in that manner. And I'll go ahead and just read a number of verses here in chapter 15, and then we'll go back and discuss the verses. So again, Proverbs chapter 15, and we'll start with verse 1. It says, a soft answer turns away wrath, but harsh words stirs up anger. Verse 2, Proverbs chapter 15, the tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fools pours forth foolishness. Skipping down to verse 4, a wholesome tongue is a tree of life. What a great image to think of. But perverseness in it breaks the spirit. Verse 7. The lips of the wise disperse knowledge, but the heart of the fool does not do so. And finally, towards the conclusion of the chapter, verse 23. A man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good it is. To highlight and summarize these words of wisdom from the Proverbs, a word chosen wisely can do the following. We'll start with the first verse we read. As it notes, Solomon notes, it can turn away wrath. The way I like to think about that is a word fitly spoken, or as it notes, a soft answer turns away wrath. A soft answer completely puts out that fire, that flame that is starting, right? Flame that could lead to eventual conflict. That word completely puts that flame out, turns away that wrath. The next verse talks about it brings knowledge and understanding. I guess a way we could think about that, if there's a disagreement, sometimes somebody will say something and it brings complete clarity. It's something you never really thought about, and sometimes that ends the disagreement there. It brings forth knowledge and understanding that you really didn't have before. The next verse notes how a good word is a tree of life. Think about this in the terms of it, a word that's a tree of life. It brings forth encouragement, hope. It's positive in trying times that people are dealing with. And finally, one of the last scriptures, as a result, a correct answer or a word fitly spoken brings joy to those who choose the words, brings joy to those that are saying the words, and I would also add to that those that are hearing the words as well. Thus, by contrast to all the negative yielded from an unbridled tongue, all that damage we talked about, there's a tremendous amount of positive that can come when a tongue is controlled and words are chosen wisely. As such, how do we avoid negative uses of the tongue and let the tongue be a tree of life, as the proverb notes? How do we do that? And how do we impart joy not only to ourselves but others who hear us speak by the very words that we choose? Let's go to Ephesians chapter 4, which I believe really summarizes my message. Ephesians chapter 4, and begin in verse 25. Brethren, something that sets us apart and something that is in our spiritual arsenal that we must always remember, or a tool in our spiritual arsenal, that helps us to combat the tongue and again to flame the fire, so to speak, is of course God's Holy Spirit. Incredible power that we have when we use it. Now here in Ephesians, Paul encourages the church to utilize that tool to strengthen their relationships with one another. So let's pick up the words of Paul in Ephesians, again, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 25, and I'll read out of the New Living Translation. Verse 25 says, "Stop telling lies. Let us all tell our neighbors the truth, for we are all parts of the same body. And don't sin by letting your anger control you. You don't let the sun go down while you are still angry, for anger gives a foothold to the devil." The proverb notes, let the tongue of the wise brings forth knowledge and understanding. Again, it adds clarity and is rightly said in due time. Furthermore, this verse notes not to give place or anger for the devil to build that fire up, to stir that fire up that would allow it eventually to spread. I know any time that I go to bed upset and I wake up in the morning still upset, I'm not the nicest person to be around, even after I've had my coffee. So there's a reason why God says that, or God inspires Paul to write that. Skipping to verse 29, which is really an important point of my message, it says the following. Don't use foul or abusive language. I think the New King James says corrupt words. Let everything you say be good and helpful, so that your words will be encouragement to those who hear them. Let your words be helpful and good to those that are listening. Consider the words you use. Are they good and helpful? Do they encourage and impart grace upon the hearers? Some things that we should consider. Continuing on, do not bring sorrow to God's Spirit by the way you live, or don't grieve the Holy Spirit. We didn't read James 3, verse 9, but James 3, verse 9 essentially says, don't let your mouth praise God in one instance and also, you know, curse your brother in the next instance. Use God's Spirit to do good. You can't, you know, say one good thing and then immediately say a bad thing. Continuing on, remember, he has identified you as his own. We're supposed to be Christ-like, guaranteeing that you will be saved on the day of redemption. And finally, verse 31 and 32, get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, harsh words, and slander, as well as all types of evil behavior. Instead, be kind to each other, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, just as God through Christ has forgiven you. Brethren, to summarize, every day and every interaction that we have, there is a choice for us. A choice to choose the words that we say. Are they going to be words that are fitly spoken? Or do we fall into the traps of the world around us and speak foolishly, without control? I think people in this world really don't think a lot before they speak. I think whatever comes to their mind, they say immediately. But again, we have God's Spirit to have that discipline and self-control to tame the tongue. We have a choice to be positive or negative. And as Paul concluded Ephesians 4, we should choose to remove bitterness and anger, harsh words and slander, and replace them with words of kindness, encouragement, and mercy. Because again, those can have a profound impact on those that are listening. Think about Dan and all those cards he received. It helped him during one of his most challenging times in life. God, through Christ, has imparted that same type of grace upon us. So let us choose our words wisely, and let them be uplifting and provide hope to all.